This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance. And I did not kill my wife, make it okay. And I believe I can fly, because I'm the king of the world. From the 90s to nothing, I'll be there.
Yippee! Yippee!
Place to be Nation Pop, welcome to the season.
Yippee!
Place to be Nation Pop, welcome to the season.
Yippee!
Place to be Nation Pop, welcome to the season finale of 90 to Nothing, season one. And, of course, I am your host, Russell Sellers, here with my illustrious and not in a very chipper mood co-host, Sam Neely.
Yippee!
Hey, let's just get this over.
That's about what happens whenever he has to watch a movie that he just completely despises. But we're going to contend that he has nobody to blame but himself because this was his idea.
No, I'm going to rewrite a prequel to this where I rewrite it to where you're going to do this.
Well, I may have subtly planted the suggestion in your head, but, you know, that glorious amount of fan fiction is going to be called what it is. So,
yeah. In my defense... I had not seen the movie in almost 20 years, and I actually have fond memories of it. Like, I knew it was bad somewhere. I didn't ever remember. Like, I just never – I haven't watched it in all those years. I've rewatched, like, the fight scenes at the end.
Yeah.
But I've never gone back and watched the movie since I saw it in high school.
That's it. And but of course –
my high school – hey, me and my friends hanging out. A Star Wars movie finally came out. We went to Taco Bell. I won some free tacos in the contests.
I mean
– who cares if the movie was bad? Movies were bad then. We saw Godzilla 98.
Right? but, of course, that kind of gives it away, folks. The movie we're going to close out this first season with 1999's Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, written and directed by Star Wars creator George Lucas. This was the first Star Wars movie to come out really for our generation because the original trilogy ended with 1983's Return of the Jedi. And years and years went by, lots of rumors and suggestion that George Lucas was actually going to do a prequel trilogy telling the story about the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker, who would, of course, go on to be Darth Vader in the original trilogy. And years go by. We're all the time hearing about this as a possibility. And then one day, lo and behold, there was a trailer of Episode I, The Phantom Menace. And immediately everybody kind of side-eyed that name, like, really? That's what they're going to call it? Okay. But, I mean, the hype, I mean, this
was.
The hype was beyond anything that I could actually remember in my lifetime, like, up to that point. Like, I had never seen hype for a movie quite like this. What was your experience in that?
It was the same. I mean, you know, I was 15, right there in the Target. Like, I remember my friends and I going to see The Waterboy and trying to make sure we got there 45 minutes early because there was supposed to be a Star Wars trailer.
Was there?
There wasn't.
Oh.
So that was a load of bullshit.
See, when that happens, like, you hear
yes.
The trailer's attached to this movie and you're like, we're getting there early so I can see this on a big screen. And then the trailers roll and the one you were waiting for is not there.
Oh, yeah. So I went home and I downloaded the trailer all up because that was what we had. And we didn't have – the best part is we didn't even have whatever video codec was required to view the trailer. So it would – like the window would show up and it was just gray and it was just the audio.
Oh.
I was like, well, I guess I'm kind of getting the idea of maybe something Star Wars-y.
Dude, I had a very similar experience, you know, because it was a QuickTime video. That was the first format that they released this trailer in.
Yeah.
Through Apple, actually. It was something that Apple got exclusive. And, yeah, we had dial-up at my house, too, and it took forever for this thing to download because they had, for the time, a pretty high-quality rip of the trailer.
Yeah.
That
was because for a while there, the Apple go to for watching trailers, too.
Yeah, they were.
Like, apple.com/trailers was where we would hang out before YouTube was a thing.
It was. We watched so many. That's where we found out about movies. I mean, that's how it was back in the day. We didn't have, like, the level of intrusive journalism like we have today. It was, you wait for the fan magazines or like different like shitty fan run websites to post something, and it was a total crapshoot about, you know, whether it was real or not. But I don't think any rumors about episode one could match what we actually got. This was definitely not on the level of what a lot of fans had written in their heads, yet all of us had the same reaction to it. We all convinced ourselves that we loved it, and we going back and watching
some of us. Some of us went back again.
Again and again.
But tickets were cheaper then, so that's, you know,
yeah,
it is what it is.
But, I mean, I think we can be forgiven for that because it was the first Star Wars movie since 83, and we had grown up with those movies. It was a big part of our childhood. It was, you know,
and just years before, we had seen Special Edition.
Yeah, like the 1997 was the Special Edition version of the original trilogy. I mean, your mileage may vary on those, but
I mean, that was my first theater experience. So
fully the same.
And our, of course, my friend group and I, we had this whole thing where we were going to pretend to be shocked at the I Am Your Father reveal. And we were like, we have to yell out no and throw our drinks at the screen. And everybody's like, no, we'll get kicked out. It's like, oh, we didn't do it. We were a bunch of pussies. But
Now we have the internet to help us get mad about movies.
Yes.
Or to pretend to be mad about movies so we can go along with the crowd.
Pretty much, yeah. What is the XKCD comic with friends?
Yeah.
Where you like a movie and then you find out your friends don't like it and then you don't like it anymore.
Yeah, you have to pretend to hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, lest you be excommunicated from your friends group.
But, oh, absolutely. Because people can't be friends if they don't like the same movies.
Yeah. Apparently that's the thing. If Twitter is truthful, which, but in any case, I definitely was there opening weekend for this movie. I was all in on everything about this because, I mean, it looked really fucking cool. And, I mean, a double-bladed lightsaber. You got Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor. Ewan McGregor playing a young Obi-Wan Kenobi. I was all in on that. I mean, the trailer kind of made it like Anakin was just kind of a ancillary like background character. So you don't see much of him in the trailer, but once he's in the movie, things really, really suck.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree with you that once he's in the movie, things really, really suck. But even before him, like, and this is where I'm saying, like, I wish I had not rewatched it for this podcast because I remember it being okay until Jar Jar and Anakin show up. And I went back and watched it just earlier this evening, and I was like, "Oh my God, no! It's bad from the start. What is this?"
It is certainly full of problems that you could in a 2019 movie. Not only that, I mean, some of the effects in this movie really don't hold up. This looks like
Between Jumanji and Toy Story.
Yeah, exactly. Like it is.
Or no, what was it? Even Toy Story is too good. Jumanji and VeggieTales.
There you go. I was going to say Toy Story actually looks pretty great by comparison to this, and that was 1995.
Yeah.
This is CGI that looks like it was done on a PlayStation 2.
Yes.
That's at one point, I swear to God, the green screen was replaced with a Windows 98 screensaver.
It has to have been. And you know that like they couldn't get the edges right in some places. That's why the Jedi Council is backlit like that.
Yeah.
Because Samuel L. Jackson is missing part of his face. I'm like, they fucked the green screen up there. That's what happened. And then they threw this glow in.
Yeah, it looks terrible. And my version of it is actually a special edition of this. That's right. George Lucas didn't just special edition trilogy. He special editioned the prequel trilogy. So if you remember seeing the movie the first time, probably on your VHS copy of it, Yoda was an actual puppet.
Yeah.
He was a younger looking version of it. But man, he was creepy as hell. That version of the Yoda puppet was really kind of freaky when you looked at him. Well, in this version I'm watching at the moment on Blu-ray, Yoda has been replaced by his CGI counterpart from episodes 2 and 3.
Oh, yay, because that's what we need.
Yeah, that totally helped the movie. That was the problem, George. That's why your vision didn't come true. No, your vision didn't come true because you got a role to play the budding love interest of Natalie Portman, who's probably got about 10 to 12 years on him.
Well, I mean, his vision didn't come true for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, that's one of the things that just really bugs me the most about my recent rewatch of this movie is, like, Natalie does not look like she is anywhere close to Jake Lloyd's age. He definitely looks like a really young kid, because he is.
Yeah.
And it's not his fault. Like, none of this can be laid at the feet of Jake Lloyd.
I know. And to go ahead and get, like, I'm going to say some shit about Anakin Skywalker. I absolutely do not condone the harassment that kid got after this movie came out. Because it's not his fault.
Oh, like, for sure, no.
Everyone in this movie is the actor who was put in a bad role. But the problem is, he was a kid, and he didn't know how to look past that. That's my take, at least.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, he was a kid who was cast, you know, in a Star Wars movie. I didn't want to do that.
Oh, and, yeah.
The problem here is totally George Lucas.
Yes.
George Lucas is the beginning and the end of Star Wars' problems, because he's a guy. He's actually a good idea guy. That's what I'm going to call George Lucas. He's a guy who picks up some really good ideas, but he doesn't need to be fully in charge of the execution of those ideas. And even he realized that back in the original trilogy, whenever he turned to two different people for Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Like, those movies
are...
Yeah,
it's like he's a world builder.
Yeah, like, he gets that. Like, he has this great idea to make something truly unique and special, but he needs an editor.
Yeah, and then in some cases he needs to realize what's a story and what's not, because we really did get just backstory. And I know the third movie especially is not as bad, but it is still just backstory. And is it something that's necessarily needed to see play out separately?
No, not at all.
I agree.
Like, I contend that the third movie is actually pretty bad.
I agree, but it was really the first time I walked out of a Star Wars movie in the theater being like, oh my god, that was amazing. Because, yeah, you know, I'd seen special editions, but I had watched the original trilogy since I was a child.
Sure.
So there was nothing left to blow my mind about this. I liked this one because it was fun. I liked the second one. I don't remember why. I liked it kind of, but then the more I watched it, the more I didn't like it. Or it could have been a thing where everybody else said it was bad, so I changed my mind. But the third one, I did walk out of that theater saying, oh my god, that was actually really cool. I really did like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the third act of the third film that really, like, elevates it, because the first two acts are still kind of shaky, but by the time you get to blow up fights and everything, it's actually pretty good. All of that works out and, you know, sets us at the beginnings of the original trilogy, or reasonably close to it anyway. But what I remember about that prequel trilogy is, I actually have more fun watching episode 1 than I have watching episode 2, even though you could make an argument maybe for episode 2 being a better movie. But that's, I don't know, that's like saying, would you rather be kicked in the left or the right shin?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the hot takes on social media about how episode 2 actually wasn't really that bad. I don't know. Like, I look back and all I can think of when I try to think about episode 2 is the pigeonhole, like the pigeonholing of a fucking Boba Fett, and all of a sudden R2 has just.
Yeah, I mean, there are things like that that don't bug me too much. I mean, my issues with episode 2 really come down to the writing of Anakin Skywalker again. It just worked. Like, none of it worked. And this movie, like, coming back to episode 1, this take on Anakin really just bugs the hell out of me now, like more so than it ever has, because here's this like young kid who's already not going to be that great an actor to begin with, but then you just give him this stilted dialogue that just
he gets multiple yippies.
Jesus, yeah, that.
Oh my god,
it is just outrageously dumb. The pod racing scene in this movie doesn't hold.
Oh
up
yeah,
for
like
me.
What's like honestly, I really think that pod racing scene was put in the movie just to so that it could have its own video game. Which I haven't played. I could imagine that being fun. I could imagine like a Star Wars based racing game being great.
There was a Star Wars game. It was on the Nintendo 64. I remember playing
it. It was a pod racing game, yeah.
Yes, it was. And it was actually pretty fun.
And I feel like this was that was probably that scene was in there for that. Yeah. And maybe to put something action related in the extended, hey, we're hanging out on Tatooine forever for some reason, and we brought Jar Jar along off of the ship with us.
Yes, oh my god, the Tatooine stuff. It just, it goes on and on and on. And it's like, man, you really could have cut about 10 minutes out of this and it would have been better. Well, it would have been less painful. But I don't know what else to say for the Tatooine stuff other than, dear god, we just had to come here and reveal that Anakin Skywalker built C-3PO.
Of course. Well, that Anakin Skywalker built C-3PO. You have to have Jabba the Hutt announcing a pod race.
Yeah.
You know, you got to give people and you know what? When I was a kid in the theater cheered when C-3PO and R2-D2 first met.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Like, people clapped. It was, yay!
Yeah.
This thing that we like just started.
And that's really what it came down to, because we at that time we didn't know any better. And,
no,
there's really not much to like here outside of the final lightsaber duel, but we'll get to that in a little bit, because this movie has a myriad of other issues that we certainly can't gloss over, and it's that I'm not really sure if George Lucas is not pretty racist.
Oh, he's yeah, and one of the because I mean I remember hearing the complaints about Jar Jar when it came, and I didn't really understand them. But the more you watch it, the more you see them. If you're in a less aware state of mind, the more you watch it, the more you're like, no, this is pretty bad. But then you get into things like the Viceroy and Watto, and my god, It's just, yeah, like, he's had aliens in his universe forever. They always speak in some other language. And for whatever, he's got them all doing English in the worst, most stereotypical accents you can think of.
Yeah, there are some not-so-subtle digs at Asians, Jewish people, and certainly black with these horrible caricatures. But
and then something I didn't know till I was looking at the Wikipedia page, when those complaints came out, he actually said, "No, that if you think that that's racist, it means that you're racist."
Yeah, that's a defense, George.
Yeah, thanks, George.
Yeah, that doesn't really erase the fact that you put in pretty blatant accents. I mean, what else? What other accent would you be doing?
Yeah,
and it didn't make sense. Like the Viceroy here certainly should have been speaking like some other language, or just I don't know. We can Monday morning quarterback that all day.
I think he kind of did hear the complaints eventually, because there was a lot less of that in episode 2,
and certainly 3.
Yeah.
Well, Jar Jar, I think he really heard the complaints about, because, I mean, the complaints about Jar Jar were certainly the loudest.
Well, the complaints about Jar Jar went far beyond it. Like, there's nothing positive about Jar Jar. Like,
nothing at all.
The racist complaints were very, very true and accurate, I think. But also, the fact that Jar Jar was just a pointless character that, yeah.
He clearly been, I think by his own admission, that he was trying to make his kids laugh, or he wanted to have a character that his kids would giggle over. But the thing is,
does nobody giggle over Yoda in his initial scenes in Empire, though?
I think they
do. I do.
I mean, that was the point of Yoda as well. Like, he was, like, you know, the funny character that, oh, yeah, we're going to flip the script on you, and he's actually super important.
Yeah, you can have comic relief that doesn't come from Bunny Guy.
Yeah, I mean, C-3PO was also one fans complained about in the original film, and saying that he was annoying or whatever, but now he's kind of a staple of Star Wars. That's something that Jar Jar is never going to be. At least I can't imagine him ever being that important to anybody ever. He's terrible.
I mean, I do have a Jar Jar keychain, but more just because it's the only keychain I've ever had that didn't just break and fall off.
Well, I don't know what that says about Jar Jar, but I can tell you one thing that Jar Jar ain't. He ain't a Sith.
Oh, God, no. But that was whatever. Like, I don't even care. Like, the fan theories, like, I honestly, and I don't know why either. I guess because I just have stopped caring about Star Wars fan theories as much. I guess maybe because they wiped the extended universe, because I was like, well, I don't know what's going on in Star Wars because I don't read all the books. And then they came back, you know, a few years ago. I'm like, well, you know, doesn't matter. Those are gone.
Yeah, the extended universe just was what it was. But, I mean, it was kind of glorified fan fiction. And honestly, I think the Star Wars universe is better off without it. The real problem with the extended universe is that there were so many different avenues of it, and it didn't actually agree with itself.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell what the continuity actually was because it was, there was just so much happening and nobody actually talked to each other. So having Star Wars back now, like in a set that ignores all of that, I think is better for everyone. But one of the stupidest things I ever heard was, oh, Jar Jar is a Sith Lord, and that explains why he's such a bumbling idiot and all these bad things happen around him. I'm like, no, he's just a pretty poorly written character from George Lucas. And, you know, we can stop trying to justify his existence with all of these like cockamamie theories and just accept the fact that he sucks and this movie also sucks.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot easier. It doesn't mean that Star Wars the whole sucks if one of the movies is bad.
No, not at all.
You can have a bad movie in a series and the series still overall be, you know, very worthwhile. And I think Star Wars is a prime example of that. He's actually got a couple of movies I think are pretty terrible. But as Star Wars is still really great. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what else people do with this series.
Yeah. And, you know, because we have however many more coming out now.
Yeah. It's like we're going to continue on with Star Wars. It's I hope it outlives. I think it will. Because, I mean, if it can survive this, it can survive anything. Now, one thing that does not bug me about this movie are the two actual leads, Liam Neeson playing and Ewan McGregor playing a young Padawan named Obi-Wan Kenobi. So these two, I actually think were the only two in the movie really trying something out of this material, right, as best they could anyway.
Yeah, I kind of like, there's a part of me that wonders if there were not directorial reasons for a lot of Natalie Portman's problems. Because I know that at first when she's got that facade of being Padme and then also being the queen, she has this monotone voice when she's the queen, but then she's very emotional. She's actually acting when she's Padme. But then after that facade drops, then and that really helps sell it because that twist, like I had no idea when I saw the movie, that twist got me. I was like, oh, wow. Of course, you go back and watch it. You're like, oh yeah, it's all like you can tell based on the facial shape when it's Keira Knightley and when it's Natalie Portman. But I noticed this time around during the ending scene, the big last battle when they're kind of invading in Naboo, that once she has dropped that facade, then even without the makeup or anything, she keeps that on-tone queen voice that she uses.
Yeah, it doesn't really work. It should have gone the other way.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think that she, and so, but I also think that Natalie Portman is, like, she's, you know, she's an Oscar winner. I think she's that, like, somebody, like, the director made her do that. That's a George problem. I'm just going to put everything on George.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's where the problems for this movie should ultimately be laid, is at the feet of George Lucas. This is his writing and his directing, so the buck stops with him.
And even going back to Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, some bad lines come out of their mouths.
Oh, sure. I didn't say their dialogue was well written. They were trying.
Oh, no.
They were just trying their
best
to polish a turd, and it's. There was really only so much anybody could do, and I feel like these two really did the best possible job they could have. Now, this movie did, however, what I think is one of the best silent badass villains of all time in Darth Maul. And while he is, that villain who's just following orders of the dude is kind of awesome when he's on screen. Credit to Ray Park. He has that like menace look down perfectly.
He does. It's just all of his scenes with leads feel unearned.
Yeah, they don't give him enough to do because we spent too much time on Tatooine instead of like building up Darth Maul.
Like they barely even like. And this has always bugged me. They rush through his first scene where he first attacks Tatooine. Like, you're like, hold on a second. Oh, wait. Oh, they're being chased. Oh, get down. Oh, we're going to do a real fight real quick. I'm like, wait, what? That just came out of nowhere, and then it's over.
Yeah, and it seems kind of weird that Darth Maul just kind of lets them go. It's like, yeah, you could have done a little bit more there, but you didn't. And I don't know. That is another one of those things. It's like, okay, it's a weird creative choice to like have this amazing or like, all this potential around unless you're so intent on spending time on things that really aren't story or like good story elements. Do I care about any of Anakin's little friends here?
Little baby Greedo.
Yeah. Not just that, but like all his, like even human friends, like all the little kids that are hanging around him. I don't know. It's like, okay, well, we're going to make this a very cutesy little scene and try to gloss over the fact that most of these caves.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. Like this is probably like the brightest and cheeriest look at indentured servitude that I have ever seen in a movie.
I know, and then also they bring up something regarding that I always thought set up for episode 3 when they talk about the transmitters that are embedded in their bodies that will blow up if they leave. I thought that was like maybe he never got rid of that and that was going to be how he ended up needing a Darth Vader suit to live.
Yeah.
Like because he falls in the lava and he's still got – now I know there's 10 years between the first two, so I'm sure – or when he was – when he was freed, then they get rid of that. It's on screen. It doesn't have to be explained, but because they talked about it and then never did anything with it, I was a bit disappointed.
I mean, I'll say that bit was just there to me, just to explain why his mitten, run away with them. This whole bit, like this whole like pod race bit, is actually extended on the version I'm watching. I know it's like, yeah, we're gonna have an extended day here on Tatooine, and we're gonna show you a whole bunch of even more uninteresting stuff. It just doesn't. None of this works. It is so freaking bad.
And even like the crowd shots, they look like a racing game from the 90s because. There's nothing realistic about like these crowd shots. We're getting this zoom pan around the stadium, and it looks like just a bunch of flat NPCs dancing to a rhythm.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like it's only slightly better than the video game graphics of the time, but of course this would probably go on to be something like what you'd see on a PS2 or a 3. But for 1999, we were all kind of in on this, I think.
Like we'd seen some good computer animation, and they were really good at that point in using computer animation to enhance 2D animation.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite there to where you could necessarily make a character that worked. Like the ones that they tried were things where it could be cartoony. Like I think was it Casper was the first movie to star a digital character?
Something like that, yeah. think so.
And but then even going to things like what we were talking about, Toy Story, the toys look real. It's the humans in the original Toy Story where you're like, oh, this looks bad.
Yeah, like the human characters in that movie are not good, but the all the toys are great. Like, you absolutely love them. But, you know, for all its faults, for all we've said negative about this movie, I can find some positives about it. Now, I know you'll disagree with me on this, but
yeah.
I actually don't mind the whole like Trade Federation as an idea, as kind of the starting antagonist here, the like the setup, the precursor for what would ultimately become the Galactic Empire. And really, I mean, the whole problem really is in the X of it all, but some of the like the political ideas that George was hitting on, I think really could work in the context of his story. I think that he's distracted by all this other stuff, all this like silly notion stuff like Jar Jar and my God, midichlorians.
I think that he knew he was doing a prequel that gave you Darth Vader, but he also knew that everybody kind of knows Darth Vader's story, and so he decided to also put in the origin story of the Empire. And I don't know if I like the way, like, because it's like he was trying to put some nuance into how this thing happened, this manipulation, like this whole manipulation, this puppet master thing. And I agree with the idea of that. I don't think the execution was there, but at the same time, I would have liked to have seen something like that for Episode 7 instead of just saying, oh, there's this thing called the First Order. They're loyal to the original Empire.
Yeah.
And because when Episode 7 was announced, I was like, there are some really cool ways they could do something. They could make Empire loyalists into a thing. Like, they could say, well, the Republic has become this bloated bureaucracy, and this group of people who position themselves as being the new rebellion are actually the loyalists to the original Empire and take over. But they just sort of brushed past all that and said, here's the new bad guys.
Yeah, when it comes to the First Order, what I kind of liked about what Episode 7 did was it brought up the idea that just because it blew up the Death Star at the end of Return of the Jedi, it doesn't actually mean this war is over, because the Empire was bigger than that. So there was always going to be those planets or those systems who were loyal to it. You may have like diminished them and allow for the Republic to rise back up and like take Coruscant and take a whole bunch of other worlds, but the civil war between these two groups never really ended. There was probably a like vacuum or something that happened, and that's how the Empire was rebranded as the First Order. Now I would be really curious to see, you know, the story of that. Like, how did the various warring factions within the old Empire actually like finally re-coalesce around a single leadership? That would be an interesting story to tell, but I don't think I want to see a movie about it. I think I'd rather like read a novel or a comic about it.
That's a good point. Like, I would like to have at least heard something about that, as opposed to just being told this is the thing. But, you know, that's not even the movie we're talking about.
No.
Where that has to do with the movie we're talking about is the parts about Palpatine grabbing power. There was some execution problems, but I like the idea. Where it kind of falls apart is where you essentially have this massive Jedi Order as part of the enforcement, where we've already seen that 30 years from now, people don't believe the Force even exists.
Yeah, there's that idea that it's all superstitious nonsense.
Yeah.
Now, I could kind of see that still being a thing here, just nobody ever talks about it. The Jedi are just stood to be a more or less a secret service of the government.
Yeah, and I think that would, like, if they had made them out to be more like a secret society, as opposed to essentially a giant, like, official state religion that trains the Secret Service.
Yeah, that's what they come off as. And, you know, you don't really see the training of the young ones until maybe episode 3, honestly. Or maybe, no, oh, a little bit in episode 2. That's right. Yeah,
you lost the planet, Mr. Obi-Wan has.
That's right. We see a little bit of that Yoda teaching kids, which was actually, that's kind of a cute scene.
It is kind of a cute scene.
I'll give them one. And
they do talk about it, because they talk about how, you know, if he had been in the city in episode 1,
yeah,
if he had been in the city, we'd have caught it earlier and started training him earlier. So the fact that they do go out and find Force children and take them into the fold is I would imagine, pretty well known, because even, like, Anakin and them know about the Jedi.
Yeah.
And, like, the Viceroy won't let Jedi in a room with him.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's, like, afraid of them because of their, like, fighting, something that they seem to be really known for. But it is...
No, I always understood the Viceroy's issue in the first scene as being the mind reading capabilities, more the telepathic.
Yeah, like, they're, I think they was afraid of them all the way around. Like, if they read my mind, there is no possible defense I can mount against the Jedi.
Yeah, and that's why they send in a droid.
Yeah, like, it's easy to, or it's easier for them to keep their very overly complicated plan under wraps. And that is, I mean, to its credit, the movie tries a little too hard in that area to, like, do a super complicated like, political plan for the Trade Federation. But fortunately, it's mostly glossed over. And it isn't even the driving point of the plot, at least in my view.
You there?
No, I'm fine. I'm back.
Okay.
Still dealing with some leftover sickness, so just trying not to cough into the microphone so people don't have to hear that. They're already hearing us, like, run down what is probably at least somebody who's listening to this podcast favorite movie.
And I've had this come up before with just, like, random people on the internet, where a friend of mine was asking about what order to watch Star Wars in, and I suggested the machete order. You go 4, 5, 2, 3, 6, and don't watch one.
Yeah.
And some other guy that I don't even know just jumped in and talked about how important the lore was that was established in the first movie. And then when I said, well, I mean, I don't agree, I'm just going to disagree because you hate episode 1, so you can just fuck off. Like, well,
wow.
Okay. Okay, guy I don't know.
That's the kind of unreasonable like, response that you'll get from a lot of Star Wars fans. And yes. That speaks to something else that I was thinking about earlier today. Star Wars doesn't really feel like so much a movie fandom anymore as it feels like a cult.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really does. Like,
I mean, it's a, like, they're good movies. I like watching the movies, but at the same time, and they were a great way, like, when I was in seventh grade and Special Edition was coming, to bond with the people that were becoming my closest friends at the time.
Yes.
Because there was something we all liked enough to where we could all just sit around and talk about it. And I still, you know, I still like watching them when they're on. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll watch Star Wars.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, even though there are things about the prequel trilogy that I certainly don't like, and a lot of it really just has to do in the execution, not so much in the plotting of it, there was a time whenever we could just accept somebody's story.
Yeah.
And it seems like we have a lot of trouble doing that now, especially with Star Wars.
Yeah, I think, like, there's this mindset that people in a fandom have that anything that they don't like coming out of it is a personal betrayal. And I guess that's why, as much as I just despise episode 1, I've never felt like I was personally betrayed. I never owned Star Wars. And, you know, my niece loves Star Wars. Like, yeah. She dresses as Rey for Halloween, all this stuff.
That's of course, awesome.
She's only, like, 9. Her favorite one is Episode 1. I was a little disappointed to hear that, but still, that's her favorite one. Like, she likes Porgs and Chewbacca, and Rey is her favorite character. And
hey, that's great. You know, Star Wars really is for every generation. Every generation gets to discover it and, you know, fall in their own way, which is one of the things that makes it so great. And, you know, I'm totally with you. Like, I may not like this movie, but I don't feel personally slighted.
No, not at all. And, like, why would I?
Yeah, like, that seems to be the thing with people is if story, like, subverts their expectations or does something that they just wholeheartedly disagree with, boy, they take it as a personal slight and will go on just seemingly unending rants about it. And you're like,
now I took Green Lantern as a personal slight, but
I didn't stop reading Green Lantern comics after that.
I know, seriously, I didn't either. Like, my big disappointment in Green Lantern was that it was a mediocre movie and it wasn't going to. Nobody's going to watch that movie and say, oh, that's awesome. Now I want to read the comics.
Yeah,
people are going to watch that movie and be like, meh.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing with it. But Green Lantern, you know, remains an awesome property that just needs to be executed in the right way. And
even in movies that I don't like, that like I didn't, you know, I make no secret of the fact that I didn't like Watchmen, the movie.
Yeah.
But enough people liked it that they started reading it, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, if it encouraged you to immerse yourself deeper into a mythology, or you found something to really love in it, then the you know, whatever medium it occurred in, it did its job.
Like, yeah.
And Star Wars is one of those things that, you know, I feel like it comes along and it appeals to you at the right time in your life. Like, you. If you experience it and you love it for whatever reason, then, you know, stay in it. Love it. Like, Star Wars really is for everyone. I think there is something for everyone in it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can even find things to like in the prequel trilogy. Even here in Episode 1.
Even in Episode 1. The big one that I think that we talk about is always the lightsaber duel at the end.
Yes, like, Duel of the Fates.
It's phenomenal. I despise the fact that it is intercut with the other two scenes.
Oh, oh God.
Anakin in the ship trying spinning because
Craig.
And the Gungan robot apocalypse or whatever the fuck that was.
You know, of those two things, I would rather watch the Gungans versus the droids than I would watch that dogfight. As dogfight is the single worst one in all of Star Wars.
Yes, it is. It's
painful to watch.
Yeah.
And that is the most mind-blowing thing, because one of the things that George did so well in one of the episode 4 that holds up to this day is the dogfight part at the end.
Oh, yeah. And also, it's not like he's never done fights that are intercut either, because he's got three fights at the end of Jedi. He's got the Ewoks stormtroopers, which apparently that's controversial, but I don't care as much because I was a baby when I saw it. But then you've also got the dogfight for the second Death Star, and you've got Luke and Vader on the Death Star.
Yes, all of the dog scenes in the original trilogy, and even, you know, even though the lightsaber duels are slower, they're still really great. Like, yeah. All of this is done and thought out so well. But episode 1, while it still, gets the lightsaber duel, you know, spot on and, like, even better than we could have imagined, the space battles are just not there. And that, to me, when it comes to the action and the fun of Star Wars, your movie's going to live and die on how well you do the actual star warring of the movie. And
yeah.
Episode 1 falls very hard on its face in that regard.
Definitely.
But we can kind of close out here with some positive stuff. That lightsaber duel is one of the coolest damn things that's ever been put.
It is great. Like I was saying, I haven't seen the movie since it came out on VHS, but like even throughout college, then we would just randomly get together and watch the final lightsaber duel.
Yeah, if you're going to watch the Machete Order of Star Wars, I think it's okay to start with the third act of episode one. You don't really need to know
who
these people
the,
are.
Yeah, and the Machete Order, like, if I can find the link, I'll send it. It's supposed to be a way to watch it if you've never seen the movies before. It's supposed to be a way to watch them that preserves both twists.
Oh.
Like the twist of Palpatine and the twist of Vader and Luke. And if you watch Machete Order, which ending out episode one, it actually preserves the Palpatine twist.
And that's something I would really appreciate. I think that would go a long way for people who've never seen it.
Yeah. But, and also, like, the other thing that I've seen mentioned is that how you get, okay, I'm your father, and then you get the backstory. Okay, well, here's kind of how he became this thing. And then Jedi opens up with Luke dressed all in black and has a force choke on some guards, and you start to actually question, is Luke going to turn evil?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the cool foreshadowing things of Return of the Jedi, was that you know, once you know that Luke's father went down this dark path, and you start to see how, like, Luke's demeanor has changed, it's a tease of, could he potentially go that route? Like, is he being pulled in that, because his father was certainly pulled that way? You don't necessarily hear in episode one see any hints of it. At least I don't.
How could you?
Yeah, I mean, Jake Lloyd doesn't
I doubt it was even written, other than this thing about fear, which is completely said by other characters.
Yeah, repeatedly.
Not even really indicated by Jake, because he's standing on a green screen, and you can see him, like, looking up. Like, people are nudging him and trying to tell him what to do. He doesn't, yeah.
There again, casted too young, and you didn't give the kid any kind of really good material anyway. So regardless of who was standing there, it was still going to suck. But again, like we were talking about before, we keep alluding to it and going away from it. That final fight scene, what did you think about the fight choreography of it, and how different it was from every Star Wars movie you'd ever seen?
I think that the fight choreography is amazing, and that the story being told is in such a way that you can forgive the fight choreography being good in this one, while it's not as impressive as in just about every other lightsaber duel. It's not about trying to win a sword fight. It's about something deeper. But in this one, it really is nothing more than trying to win a sword fight.
Yeah,
and it plays out that way. Yeah, especially when Qui-Gon falls and Obi-Wan gives himself over to his anger, essentially. You know, he's not meditating while the force field is up. Qui-Gon is. Obi-Wan is walking back and forth prowling. He's in fight mode. And then once Qui-Gon is down, then Obi-Wan is rage.
And it's...
So, yeah, throw in some backflips and some cutting dudes in halves.
And I haven't seen a fight scene like that, or at least I don't recall one. Certainly never in Star Wars. So it was some mind-blowing stuff.
It also does show it, like, it does kind of foreshadow this change to who Obi-Wan is, because he actually dies. It's in a lightsaber duel where he turns off his saber.
Yeah.
And he's still to the end trying to say, look, come on, Darth.
It's a well done scene in an otherwise pretty, like, poorly done film. But The music in it is also really good. Really great.
Music is really good.
John Williams is still on his game. Like, even though the movie isn't as good as the other Star Wars films by any stretch, that score is still pretty on point.
Yeah, and I'm glad that even now, like, because that's something, especially since we're watching the 90s movies, scores used to be so important to movies.
Yes.
And it's all just like, it's, I guess it's just cheaper to have a soundtrack than a score. Like, and when there is a score, it's just tones. Like, that was something when I was listening to Avengers Endgame, I realized there are distinct going through this that even more so than the other Avengers movies, that I liked getting back to that. And the new Star Wars movies do the same.
Yeah, they're scored very well. Like, I love the music that's been written for the new trilogy. Really excited for Rise of the Skywalker. I think that one's.
Yeah.
But I say that as somebody who unabashedly loves The Last Jedi.
I do too. I don't care what people say.
So. I don't either. I think it's a really well done film. That being said, unfortunately for us, we're closing out this season on a bad movie. And
that's okay, because we do actually have a special guest.
Oh?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I actually have with me here young Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, dear God.
And he's going to tell us about kind of some of the things we've got going on Place to Be Nation Pop.
Oh, no.
Anakin, you want to take it away? Well, yes, sir. Steve and Kelly are celebrating 1 year of Songs with Friends by watching some classic NSYNC. Yippee! Jar Jar?
Oh, Risa got a heavy dose of hoops for you, courtesy of Cowboy D'Amato on This Week in Sports, and Adam and Andrew on the NBA team. Annie?
Well, Andy Atherton and Miranda Berthold are movies for a discussion on Detective Pikachu. I really want to see that. Is Pikachu an angel?
Oh, and the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular has returned. And Glenn and Scott are breaking down Star Trek Discovery Season 2. What the Star Trek?
I don't know, but the hard-traveling fanboys are going off the page and talking about Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Also, stay tuned for a giant-sized edition of a show coming soon. Includes past guests and the revealing of the Place to Be Nation's composite rankings of all 22 MCU movies. Yippee!
I don't know who invited Jar Jar to this. I apologize to the listening audience.
I gave Anakin a plus one, and I thought he'd bring Padme.
Once again, he completely fails. Yep. But what doesn't fail is the other side of the PTBN feed, the PTBN rest feed, because there's a lot going on over there as well. JT and Chad are back in the wrestling war zone as they discuss what was going on in WWF and WCW during the week of January 8th, 1996. In the fourth episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben chats his buddies Tommy and Gator as they talk about Gator's recent experience of promoting an independent show in the Washington, D.C. area. Scott and JT welcomed in Jambalaya Jake Williams to break down the April 89 Madison Square Garden house show featuring a big WrestleMania main event rematch.
Man, I'm really could go for some jambalaya right now. Just throwing that out there.
Right? Like I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And finally, Scott Scolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey have previews of Money in the Bank and Double or Nothing, as well as another classic TNA pay-per-view recap on the newest edition of Main Event. You can check out all of that on the wrestling feed, as well as check out all our social media message board at www.bigelow34proboards.com for information on joining the GWWE pay-per-view and TV match best ever project. Get on that conversation today. Start researching your lists. And with that,
I got one more special guest. He just wants to point out, he wants to tell us how mad he is that he wasn't in this movie.
Okay.
R.I.P. Peter Mayhew.
Yes, absolutely. R.I.P. Peter Mayhew, big loss to the Star Wars community. He is just an absolute staple of this whole, like, fandom, but the movies as a whole, like, it cannot be understated just how important and vital he is as a part of all this, because he was as much a part of bringing Chewbacca to life as anyone who was writing these movies.
Oh, yeah.
He will be missed, but we will never forget him, because we're always going to be introducing future generations to the absolutely wonderful Chewbacca. So with that, I guess we can tell the folks at home a little bit about what's going to be coming up with this show. We made a decision to kind of stop here for a little bit and go seasonal with this show. But the good news is, folks, it's not going to be that long of a hiatus. We're actually planning to come back in December of this year. And when we come back, you're going to be getting 2 episodes a month rather than just one, because we are going to record like a whole bunch of episodes in the off season.
We don't have to tell people our secret of how we're going to do it. Well, they can just assume that we work really hard.
Well, we do. It'll still be a lot of work because we still got a lot of movies to watch. But when we come back, we decided to adopt a little bit of a theme to give us a little bit more organization in this show going forward. So when 90 to Nothing comes back, we are going to have nothing but movies from the year 1990. And each subsequent season, we will be going year by year. Until, of course, we run out of years, and then we come up with other ideas. But since we'll have like at least 10 seasons there to with of going year by year, I think we'll be okay for a while.
I think so too.
So we're gonna come back, and I think we kind of decided what our first movie is gonna be, didn't we?
We went through a list. Did we straight up decide?
It's
not that Captain America one, is it?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that yet. We'll eventually get to that. Like we'll touch on, you know, 90s movies, and I think eventually maybe even 90s sequels to 80s movies, or 90s sequels to 70s movies. That happens sometimes too. But
oh yeah, it does.
What we'll be getting into, we kind of like the idea of doing a Christmas theme thing. So 1990 had Edward Scissorhands.
It's true.
So we'll be diving into that one first on the very first episode of season 2. And then we will just be going through some of our favorite hits and probably some misses from the year 1990. So we hope you guys will come back for that. And in the meantime, you know, go back and listen to all the already recorded this show. We had a lot of fun talking about this stuff for this first season. And we're really looking forward to season 2, and hope you guys are going to come back and join us for that one. And, you know, maybe we won't just rip your favorite movie apart. Maybe we'll, and maybe.
And I think it's been, you know, it's been a learning thing. It's, I know you've had, what, 18 podcasts by this point?
Yeah.
This is my first.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing, is like trying to create some balance and feel there.
We just gotta you know, figure out a format, and I think we're getting there.
Yeah, it's all a big learning process. We are making it happen, and it's always fun to revisit these movies with somebody that I just enjoy talking about movies with. So when we come back, Amber, we'll have a whole lot of new stuff ready for you guys, and I'm sure that we'll be even bringing up some movies that you probably forgot about, because that's another fun thing about this show, is you never know what we're gonna say or what movies we may just dig out of the vault.
Yeah.
So,
Russell, where are you on the internet?
Oh, people can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Russell_Sellers. Where are they going to find you on the internet?
They're going to find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Woodles.
There you go. Go give us a follow. We have all sorts of like fun stuff.
I post nothing fun.
That's not true. He's fun all the time. He has a great Twitter feed, folks. You guys got to follow that stuff. He says some really outlandish stuff sometimes, but it's still funny.
Sometimes I just retweet Russell, though.
Yeah, he does that too. But you know, I don't know. I don't know if anybody's getting anything out of that. I'll get something out of it, because you're going to retweet me, and I'm all for it.
That's right. You can look at your. I lost the word.
We'll leave that to people to what I'm looking at. Insert awkward lightsaber joke here. But anyway, we've determined that Star Wars Episode I Phantom Menace is a terrible movie. You should never watch it.
Watch it if you want. I'm not going to tell people they can't watch a movie.
Yeah, unless you just want to.
Watch it if you want to. But I wish that I had not watched it, and then I could just remember it as a fun movie I saw as a kid.
Yeah. Probably won't be rewatching it anytime soon after this myself, but it's always fun to go back and revisit even the terrible movies of our childhood. And we're going to do some of that next season, but I think we're also going to be picking out some movies that we genuinely loved as well. So with that, we will see you all next season on 90 to Nothing. Thank you for joining us this first season. Have a great one.
Yippee!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTBN Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.